This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hun Demeritz, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. Got to sit down a couple weeks ago with one of our great friends and sponsors, Promotive, and sat down with Lisa and Sam to talk about a number of different things that they got going on, what's happening with the industry, and everything else. Like we talked about a lot on the episode, I'm very surprised to see the trend and the shift of how average shops are getting technicians now compared to when I first started in this industry 20 years ago. I know I learned a ton. I know that there was a lot of surprising things that came out of it, and always, always, always awesome to talk to them. So I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you want to hear your question answered on here, or just have a question for me or an idea for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. My new book, Beyond the Bays, a Financial Playbook for Auto Repair Shop Owners, which was inspired by many of your questions on here, is available now on Amazon in paperback and Kindle. Want to talk to us about accounting and tax services Parmelis offers shops like yours? Shoot us an email at info@parmelis.com. And last but not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors for being such loyal supporters of the show. If you need to hire top talent for your top shop, give Promotive a call. If you need to get your marketing into the right gear, give Overdrive a call. If you need to get your back office under control, give Wicked File a call. And if you need help getting your shop in the right direction, give Maverick Shop Owners a call today. Great news. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. Turn chaos into clarity with Wicked File, the AI for auto repair shops. Transform invoices into insights, protect cash flows, and stop losing parts, cores, or credits to maximize your bottom line. Get Wicked File. Building a profitable shop is one thing. Building profit and freedom into the same business? That's what the Maverick Shop Owners video training is all about. Our listeners can get free access at maverickshopowners.com/blueprint. What happened if you knew next week's car count before it happened? Overdrive combines real marketing leadership with AI-powered campaigns through Overdrive OS. It predicts slowdowns, it launches offers, and tracks your ROI automatically. Stop guessing, start controlling growth, and visit overdrivemarketing.com. That's OVERDRYVE marketing.com. So yeah, Sam, Lisa from Promotive, I just want to welcome you guys on here. Happy sponsors, happy guests. Neither of you have been on. Promotive has been on before. So yeah, just want to welcome you guys.
Thanks. We're excited.
So one of the things, and I had to stop because we had a lot of conversations before we started recording, is Lisa, it was a pain point for you. And we kind of joked about this, of some shop owners joking about PTO. But let's start there. Is PTO something that's changing? Is this something that people are really demanding? And what does that look like for most shops?
So most shops that we're working with needed somebody yesterday when they're bringing us on board, and they don't want the Indeed applicants. They want to, you know, for lack of a better term, poach from shops where or dealers that people have been at for a long time. And they want the, you know, steady, loyal employee. Well, with loyalty comes PTO. And what we're finding oftentimes is that the shops have PTO policies that are typically 1 week after 1 year, 2 weeks after 2 years, 3 weeks after 5 years, something like that. Most call it A-level technicians today that a shop would want are in that family age, right? Maybe in their mid-30s, early 40s, and they don't want 1 week of PTO. Their spouse would be mortified if they came home and said, I got this amazing opportunity. This shop is going to invest in my growth, my career.
Especially in like today's kind of like culture and climate. I think like after COVID, that all shifted. And even in, you know, our field here, it's like, you don't see the average of like, no, I want to work 24/7, grind, grind, grind.
Oh, that's not normal?
Yeah, right? We've been trying to coach shops on having more PTO. And it doesn't have to be, you know, you get 15 days on day one. You can accrue it and give 1.25 days a month. And it's shocking to a shop when I say that I think you should have 3 weeks of PTO. And we have to stop competing with the neighbor next door that gives 3 days of PTO and mine's better than theirs. No, we have to compete with Tesla. We have to compete with Rivian. We have to compete with the local gas and electric companies.
Municipalities, right?
Exactly. And they give amazing benefits. And a lot of technicians, believe it or not, value that stuff. So PTO is a big deal that I think is one of the easiest controllables. And you want your people to take PTO. You want them to have some time off. You want them to enjoy their families and their lives and give them that break.
Well, and also, if you think about it, they don't want to start from the bottom anymore. They've already worked so long to get up to this top, to get this many weeks and to be able to utilize it. And then to make that transition over to a new location, they have to start from the bottom.
Yeah, that's tricky. And we've had that in our own business, right? Because it's like, you try to be fair to your team of like, hey, the PTO is rewarding you for being here, experience. But then like, if you have someone with 10 years experience making a lateral shift over to your business, it's not really fair to put them back to year one. Is it fair to put them to year 10? Like, do you see that causing issues in the shop? Or you think it's like, if you want to respect this person, this is just part of their compensation. I need to come along with them.
I think that it's not just a PTO issue when it comes to what my guy that's been here for 10 years and my gal has been here for 5 years took this long to get the current benefits. And that's across comp too. You see it, you know, hey, my guy that's been here 10 years is making $50 an hour. And this new guy coming in that also has 10 years experience, but it's their day one. I can't pay them the same that I'm paying, you know, Billy over here that at 50. So it's not just PTO, it's across all benefits. And that counts, you know, their hourly rate too.
I think that's actually kind of where the whole flat rate component came in, is because they can start them at a higher rate because then it comes down to their turn numbers.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'll pay you $1 million because it doesn't cost me anything if you're not doing anything.
Well, and to stay on the topic of the PTO, it's also how are the shops allowing their team to actually take it? So that is across the board, up and down. There's so many different versions of what they do. I have some clients that will average out what their turn hours are and give them that.
This was going to be my next question, because like, when you see PTO, it's generally always my hourly and salary guys. Like the flat rate shops, you know, and it's obviously changing. Those are ones that I've always said of like, no, it's production based, it's commission based. And then your thing of like, all right, they are flat rate. How do you come up with this?
Well, and I mean, if you look at, I've been in sales for my entire career for the most part, and a salesperson, you can't take time off for the most part unless you have that support that averages out and takes what your rolling numbers are and calculates it to where it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And you're not starting from behind. Cause I mean, who said it last night? It's the first of the year. It's all, what did I do for you lately?
Yeah, really.
So it's being able to allow them to be able to take that PTO that they're actually calculating to.
Yeah. Because you see this like with the tech companies, like unlimited PTO and the average person is taking 2 days off. We see this a lot of times in shops, because when I talk to my clients, I know when their technicians or advisors are out, because it's the first thing that they say. If you're going to offer to the guys, are you actually creating a climate that can allow this to happen? Now, just from like an operational perspective, I was talking to one of my shops about a month ago, forget where they were, but it was hunting season. So he had lost pretty much his entire shop. But anyone that knows hunters, that is a non-negotiable, right? Like, and they were like, if you do not want me, then fine. I'm still going to go hunting. I'm just not going to be back there next week. But what are you seeing people like structure this? Because obviously if you just shut down the whole shop, you stagger in it, you know, because a lot of guys are going from no PTO to, hey, I only have 5 guys here. How do I still support my customers and stuff like that?
I've built companies from the ground up and 360 payments and now Promotive, and I am on boards of others, and I give the same advice. Every PTO policy should have a percentage of people in that department that can be out at any given time. So I personally think, you know, it's very hard when you have a team of 10 and one person's out, that is 10% of your team.
And it could be 100% of whatever that role is. No redundancy.
So you have to be strategic with it and do what's best to keep your business running with as minimal hiccups as possible. So ours is 25 or 33% of that department can't be out any given time. First come, first serve. And we have access to a PTO calendar. So they have to put it through our payroll as a request first. And they also have to put it on the PTO calendar so you can see when other people are out. So if Sam was, you know, she's not an account manager anymore in a partner role, but she, there's 3 account managers. So if she wanted to take a day off, her first thing that she needs to do is check the PTO calendar to see if other people have already have their days approved.
I wasn't good at that.
You're like, that's what, this is the process and procedures put in place, right?
Yes, I kind of help make sure we put that in place.
And I tell them, don't book the cruise or the flight without checking this, because I don't want to be a bad guy as a business owner, right? Like, I don't want to say no to PTO, but we have to do what's best for the business.
I think a part of it also comes to planning and not being surprised. So if you know that your tech's going to be out, maybe ensure that your scheduling is supporting that. Magical. If you know that your service advisor is going to be out, then maybe make sure that you have somebody that is trained up and that could help and support that. So it's not as much of a, my hair is on fire. Oh my gosh, the world's ending now. And
yeah, communication could fix a little bit of these things. You know, I'm talking, and that's very funny. I always say this, like, I get the most one-sided reports from shops because it's only people's bosses. Oh, everyone's taken off. It's like, they probably told you this months ago. They go hunting every single year. You didn't do your part. But that kind of segues into like hiring is, I think a lot of people probably go out, try to do this on their own. I can't find someone, I go hire you guys. How often do you guys see of like, we can find the people, but the funnel of getting the right people might be you and not the ads or whatever that you're writing. Like, how do you work with shop owners to like help coach them up of, a lot of times they have a great business, but they need to help marketing their business and like the features.
This is funny. We just talked about this last night as well. A big part of it also is making sure that one, they're having realistic expectations on what their needs are.
They don't always have realistic expectations.
What's your line, Lisa?
The Amazon line? I'd say if it's not quality, it's quantity for what they're not getting from us, right? And if it's not quantity, it's quality. And if it's not quality or quantity, it's the spacing and how we submit our interview summaries.
We're always wrong. But also it's the, when they do come to us, they typically need somebody because they already tried. And that, so that window of time that they haven't had somebody or their need is now shrunk for us because they burned all that time trying to figure it out themselves. And so their immediate need is, I need somebody yesterday. I want them now. And why are you not able to deliver this? So having realistic expectations on the timeline and ensuring what it is that they actually need. If you need somebody yesterday and it was an A-level technician, and you were not able to find them on your own or have that pool come in, maybe let's be realistic on what you truly actually need. Because maybe it might be a B that has that potential to grow. That's a little bit easier to find versus that top tech that everybody wants.
Sure, yeah.
So that kind of lessens the blow a little bit to that bay being empty. But also it's really getting to the nitty gritty on what are the skills that you're looking for? What type of work do you actually see? Not every shop is the same with the type of work they see. They might specialize in a make a model that they see on a higher rate. And I mean, if you're coming from California into the East Coast, you guys know what rust out there.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what rust was for a minute. What? That what's
the salt and the sand and all that stuff from the beaches.
But there's a lot of different pieces that go into play with ensuring that the shop is aware of what they're looking for so that we can write the job ads and start working on that funnel. Our goal really isn't to say we can find everybody and anybody. It's to say that we can help identify and filter the candidates and get them in front of the shop.
I love that idea because like what it actually is like just probably like your shops, we sometimes say like, hey, you're being order takers, not letting the customers know what they need, just what they've asked for. What I heard you say is a lot of times I think these shop owners are probably trying to replace whatever person just left instead of looking and being like, this A-Tech, Greg just left. But do I really actually want to replace Greg or Greg's who I had? Because I also see a lot of people that bring in or do a good job of attracting new people, but every time I talk to them, they have a new person in there. How much of that is culture? How much of that is fit? Yeah, it's really hard. If you're talking about this of, I found this super, super experienced technician, but I only work on Mercedes. He has literally zero practical experience for us. Yeah. That's super cool.
That's a common one all the time, right? Especially when you have a shop that's like, I need a Euro guy. Okay, well, now you just took that A level, you know, which is this big, and now you just made it this big, but you need it yesterday. Come on.
What is the top tech that everyone wants? Like, what is that prototypical? Like, do I want an A Mercedes tech? Like, what is the most in-demand person? And then the opposite side of it, what do you see the most supply of in the market? Like, everyone's the A techs and the most C techs are out there looking to move or what?
Well, I would say the most demand, at least for my clients, is that A-level European tech that is ultimately the A-level diagnostic production.
Yeah, the unicorn. They need to be able to fix everything and they're going to do 60 hours a week.
Exactly. Yep. They want that. And they also want them to be able to help everybody else and also produce and yeah. also do all this and a backflip and a toe touch at the same time. But realistically, it's that C, that B, you know, that strong C, the B. Those are the ones that are on the market right now. And we all know there's a shortage, if you didn't know. We all need to fix this by helping grow these candidates that want to actually work. They want to learn. Somebody told me when we were at our kickoff, actually, and it made all the sense, and I feel stupid for not actually realizing this. But the training model that we currently use right now when we are training in shops has always been that A-level tech is stopping what they're doing and they're helping the C's.
It's supposed to be and does when the boss is there. And then other times it's probably like, get away from me. You're hurting my paycheck. I'm going to go do what I'm doing.
But after what I'm about to say, it's going to all click and you're like, oh my gosh. But having the GSTs with the C's, they're training that. The train the trainer model. Yeah. The B's are training the C's and the A's are training the B's. That makes so much more sense. Yes. And also you're instilling that training concept in those technicians so that it continues to grow. If we had it that way, we would be able to grow a lot faster.
Yeah.
And that's what I see from my side of working with as many shops of like the people that do not have employment issues are not the ones that are constantly recruiting. They're the ones that have taken this on the chin and saying like, we're going to connect with the trade schools. We're going to bring our people in. We're going to have an education. We're going to bring them to places like Vision. Because you're right, like people are leaving this industry. And I think if you don't all, like give them a position, also room to grow, you're going to lose people out of this industry as well too.
Let's be honest here. You have an A tech that's talking to a GST or a C level. They're talking over their head.
Oh yeah.
And then it's like, this guy's an idiot. Cause he doesn't understand what I've learned over the last 15, 20 years. It's mind boggling to me. But when I was told that, I was like, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
And we need to start adopting this. And a lot of people, they want to utilize our services for those A's and those high strong B's, but reality, they should utilize our service for all the roles. Yeah. And have that funnel continually growing and always recruiting. I mean, if you think about it, right? Somebody gets injured. You don't have that bench. Turnover rate in this industry is extremely high. The injury rate is extremely high. And then say they actually want to leave you. 2 week notice is what? Nothing.
No, not.
It's not enough to replace that A-level dyad guy, or even it's not enough to replace that strong C.
And honestly, the technicians are fearful to give 2 weeks notice because they think that the shop is going to let them go.
Well, it's standard earlier. Practice for majority of the shops now. I mean, I'm on the forums and on the Facebooks. The Facebooks. How old am I? Apparently, I forget. But it is standard practice that when somebody gives you their 2 weeks, that you just let them go. And this is from some of the high respectable shops that I know really well.
Because like it's standard practice in our industry, right? We let you go immediately. Well, we'll still pay you on it, but yeah.
I would assume they aren't.
Well, they'll say yes on the forums, right?
I mean, maybe. Some of them are real brutally honest. Yeah, right. But kind of digging in, I've asked like, why? Why are you letting them go? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's, well, they're not going to care about the work anymore. It's not about having that integrity and making sure the stuff is done. We have a higher amount of returns and amount of comebacks within that time of that 2 week notice.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. You know, if like, you know, you might see that car coming back and hear your boss give you grief, you're probably going to, you know, go fix that strip bolt. If you're out next week, it's like jack up the impact and we're sending this thing and we're moving on.
Sledgehammers come out.
Yeah, exactly. Like this boss should have given me a raise a long time ago.
Is your recruitment process draining your valuable time and resources? What if there was a partner who could take your recruitment efforts off your plate? Look no further. Promotive is your ultimate solution for hassle-free staffing focused solely on the automotive industry. On the web at gopromotive.com. Promotive understands the challenges you face when searching for the perfect technician or service advisor for your shop. That's why we've developed a platform that takes the hassle out of recruiting. Michelle Tanzi from Euroclinic said, "I am a shop owner and recruiting new talent is so time-consuming. Promotive does the majority of the seeking and recruiting. They reach out to the candidates for you, and when they feel they are a good match for you and culture, they make the connection. They follow up throughout the interview process, and we make sure that the candidates are a good fit and the shop is a good fit for the candidates. I admire that they genuinely want both parties to win. They recruited and paired us with a solid B-Tech and Master Tech. Both left a dealership position and are still part of our team. We are very happy with the character and culture match, and both technicians have become valuable team members. Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and join the growing community of shop owners who have found their ideal team members with Promotive. Every month, auto repair shops can lose over $20,000 in uncredited parts, cores, and lost profits. Wicked Files' AI-powered software is a game changer. It helped one shop owner recover over $10,000 in missed credits, and others have recovered tens of thousands more. Wicked File puts cash back into your business and hours back into your day. Stop leaving money on the table. Visit wickedfile.com to learn more and get started today. You're working on growing a more profitable shop. That's critical. But the profit doesn't automatically give you the freedom or reduce your stress. That's exactly what the 24-video blueprint course by Maverick Shop Owners addresses. Customers, sales, profit, people, systems, and freedom. How to build profit and freedom into the same business. Get free access for our listeners only at maverickshopowners.com/blueprint. Most shops don't have a marketing problem. They have a systems problem. Overdrive.os was built to solve that. It's not another vendor. It's your AI-powered marketing operating system built specifically for auto repair shop. It predicts slow weeks before they happen, automatically launches revenue-driving campaigns, tracks ROI down to the dollar, and optimizes performance in real time. No guesswork, no wasted ad spend, no hope marketing, just predictable car count, stronger retention, and measurable profitability. Schedule a strategy call today and let's build your growth engine. Visit overdrivemarketing.com. That's OVERDRYVE marketing.com.
Before you mentioned of, like you said, like we have a labor shortage. One of the weird things that just came out today is the jobs report said in February, we actually lost jobs. Are you guys seeing that let up at all in the automotive industry, or is the automotive industry just having a completely different labor market?
I would be curious where that data came from.
It's just everyone. It's like all industries. A lot of this is probably coming from like, you know, the tech companies and stuff like that, because in other fields, you know, like software and some of the, you know, analytics and finance, people are losing jobs. AI is taking it over. But for technicians, I think it's just as hot as ever and probably just as hard to find a good tech.
I don't think we've experienced too much of that. We have some shops that will pause a job search because of seasonality. You know, I don't think that's the right time to necessarily pause some stuff, in my opinion.
Well, talk a little bit about that, because I think there's some timing on it. I just had Mike in here before we're talking about advertising, and it's very similar of like, if you are already getting into your slow season, it's too late to hire or recruit or anything. So,
well, I have a whole different idea. I'd love to hear your feedback on this. So I've been in the automotive space for a long time, not working in a shop. I have never done that myself. But with 360, as an example, we have all the volume. We can see that we will have a massive uptick in March compared to December, January, and February. And it stays then pretty steady. And then it dips a little bit in the summer and then comes back up after, you know, kids go to school and everything again. I don't understand why we don't take, you know, what we do in the corporate world, if you will, to the shops from a comp plan perspective. So as an example, our sales team at 360, and we have seasonality built into Promotive too, has lower quotas during the summer slump, we call it, and higher quotas in March and April. You can figure out ways to reduce your overhead during those lower or slower times and increase it during the higher times, so it would stay relative across the board as a percentage. And I would say, like, you know, let's use a hybrid model and comp in the tech world. Somebody's at 40 an hour and then they get bonuses at, you know, at 35, they get an extra $2 an hour. At 40 hours, they get an extra, you know, $3 more, whatever it is. Like, why not keep that hourly the same, but then make the $2 increments on the production higher or lower basically.
Worth more when it means more and stuff like that. Yeah.
And that would help the technicians, honestly, too, because they come to us when they're looking for jobs because my shop's slow. Well, you just got used to, you know.
It's also a funny thing, too. It's like, you know, and that's probably a value thing, too. Is it like, is it slow? Is you not making enough money? You working too much for the money you're getting, or what is it? Yeah.
So that's something I think like people should be thinking about is how do I make my payroll, you know, consistent with my revenue.
So we were actually just talking about this before, and like the difference between my shops that absolutely print money and my shops that do okay is the shops that print money have 12 good months that look exactly the same.
And they're doing marketing.
Like, if they're doing marketing, they always have people on the bench, because if they're losing someone, someone's already coming in. These shops generally don't really have to do that much marketing or recruiting, because everyone knows it's the place you want to work at. And that's like in 2026, what we're seeing in certain areas is like, hey, if you can really be the shop to go to, you can start having some gravity and attracting stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think that if you're struggling with your shop, a lot of people, like you said, are getting to March where it got tax refunds. People are thawing out, but they've already lost 20, 30 grand. They bleed money January, February. They try to make it back. But I always say, instead of trying to kill it even more in April through August where you're already good, it's everything else that you got to bring up a little bit.
If they've been in business for a minute, those, what do you call it, the valleys, they're not surprising. So I did marketing for a good time. I actually used to be Mike's competitor, which is always fun. But you plan for that. There's a reason why a lot of the marketing companies will push that you do tax refunds, that you do a New Year special, that you do a Christmas special, and you send out cards or communicate. But the big one is educating your clients on when they need to come back in for service, because magically they actually need service in that time. But if you're not communicating to them and you're not becoming a priority for that time when they are busy, then they forget about and they push it off. Yeah. I think a lot of the shops that you see that are consistent, they communicate with their clients. They exit schedule their clients. They are doing marketing and reminding them they need to come in. They're looking at their workflow and they're working their existing database, not just the brand new ones that are trying to get back in or trying to get in.
Someone recently talked to me. I say the dental industry is the most similar to the automotive industry because nobody wants to go to the dentist.
I was about to say the same thing. If your dentist wasn't texting, they just texted me yesterday. If they don't text you, you'll never go.
Yeah, I did a cleaning probably 3 weeks ago, and they're scheduling my cleaning while I'm still in the chair before I'm getting up, getting me my, you know, do you want your toothbrush? You want it floss? Like, what do you want to take home with you? By the way, let's put you on the calendar. Because, and I'm like, sure, let's do it. I don't know where my, like, I know my travel schedule for the most part, but like, yeah, something could change.
But it's very similar. You're booking it for 6 months in the future, right? You're coming in for a predefined smaller service. They're trying to find more stuff. Super similar to this industry.
Any shop I've gotten my car, you know, the oil change, put me on the calendar for 6 months.
Oh my goodness. Exit scheduling is like the most like bare minimum requirement.
Yeah. I've never, I mean, you're from the DVI world and everything too,
but marketing DVI.
Yeah. So, and can you, you know, put that during some of the slower times and stuff, but consistency.
And one of the things that I do with the clients when I do an intake with them starting off is I want to know what their ARO is. I want to know what they're utilizing for marketing. What's their car count? How many bays do they have? What services they offer? I calculate that out utilizing that marketing background, saying, okay, you should have X amount of cars coming in per vehicle. Here's your ARO. Do they have enough to staff what they're trying to do or enough to keep them hungry and fed?
How much are like your prospective candidates coming back and asking some of those questions? Because like, if I'm a service advisor going in for like a commission-based plan, I want to know, like, do these guys know how to sell? Like, do they have a $150 ARO at 20% gross profit? Are you seeing that? Are you seeing that on the tech side or not really?
They're not asking us those questions, but
we're asking them.
We're hoping that they're asking the shop those questions. Yeah. If I was a tech, I'd be asking all day about the service advisor and,
what's
you know,
culture like?
And that's what I was wondering, like, with as tight as the industry or tight as the market is, like I said in my class yesterday, you have 10 shops all sitting down with one technician being like, guys, this is why you should come here. So how much of this is like the technicians or any of the candidates interviewing the people? Like, are most of these people going to sit on multiple interviews, or they're getting one and picking it?
They're sitting in on multiple, and they're not all with our shops, right? So in our pitch, we tell them, you know, we only work with the best of the best. Yeah. We don't have the bandwidth to work with, you know, a shop doing $200,000 a year in revenue, because one, they probably wouldn't want to pay our fees. But two, we would only want to get our cars fixed and tell our significant other or family member to work at shops that we have already vetted. So we tell the technicians that we're screening for them through the pizza parties or the lunches on Tuesdays, whatever they're getting, and that we're vetting the best of the best.
Wow. Okay. So like, you guys are not only, and I guess that also like increased the value of your service. It's people know that this is not just a recruiter where I'm going to put you into any shop that has a job listing. Like, we have a reputation here that not only do we help shops, but we help people get into good shops.
And I even incorporate the ARO, the car count, and as much information as I can get on the job ads that I'm posting. I want the applicants to see what the potential is and to ensure that they have the data they need to be able to make that conscious decision to say yes.
Yeah, because that real unicorn that you're looking for understands this stuff, you know, has been to a shop that, you know, struggled in some of these.
One of my friends told my sister about 10 years ago, and it resonates with me all the time, is never run from a job, run to a job. And we try to teach our team to talk to techs about that too, because they're just chasing dollars. If I had to stereotype, you know, the majority, they're looking for what's going to pay them the most money. And yes, they say they want, you know, culture and career growth and benefits and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, money talks. So they're looking for that, you know, income growth that they can get. And they're not thinking about, you know, is this the shop that I can see myself retiring at and truly being with for the long haul in their interview process? We are trying to get them to think like that.
Shift the mindset of, like, if you want this to be the short term, who's going to pay the most? You're going to make the worst long term decision for your own career.
I do think commute is a big variable in this. I read some stat a while ago, and I always joke around and say 78% of statistics are made.
I would say 85% of the ones on my podcast. 30% of, yeah.
But it was something along the lines. This was like when COVID was happening and remote work. And then now people have to go in 2 or 3 days, you know, a week or whatever the case is. But people are willing to take a 12% pay cut to be within a 15-minute commute.
And in 2016, it was the exact opposite, I think, you know, if you were to ask people.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, if shops want the best tech, the ones, the unicorns that we're talking about, they should get creative with how to get people outside of that, you know, 15-minute commute, because some of them, it's limited in certain areas.
Are you guys offering, do you see shops offering like relocation packages to try and like broaden their search to other states? And how does that look?
We do.
For that, like, specialized something where they're like, hey, there's a handful of these guys, we can find them. Almost none of them are going to be in the area. Yeah. And so what are they going and flying these people out for interviews?
They do Zoom meetings first.
They do a stage of them. So typically they'll do a Zoom meeting. And then if they both like each other, it's almost like dating. They like each other on that first date, then they'll take it to the next step. They probably will do another Zoom meeting, depending on how far the candidate is, and ensure, kind of get all the wrinkles out. And then if it makes sense, fly them out. Sometimes candidates decide they are going to fly out on their own. They want to see it, which the shops actually kind of appreciate that. It's like taking that initiative, right? But the blind hires are a no-go, in my opinion.
It's super cool because obviously coming from outside the industry, you're like, that's kind of just standard interview practice. Yeah. Like when we hear it, I'm like, yeah, we've had people from out of state hire and stuff like that. But for like a shop owner, you're like, wait, what? They're used to, the kid comes in, he's good. I'm going to hire him. If he's not, then we're going to send him out. And within a couple of days, we'll have our new hire. Super cool.
And to my understanding, you can use these expenses as ad backs too, if they're truly one time. So I didn't know what ad backs were until I sold 360, right? And you're like, this is an ad back. This is an ad back. But it's an expense that you can, you know, offset in completely different financial ways.
I would argue another way on it of like, there is just no cost to this stuff. Like if you're really trying to get that person, just the productivity numbers, we looked at this the other day, but I think the average technician that for all of our clients last year was producing around $29,000 in sales a month. And so around like $16,000 in gross profit. So it works out of like, how much is this costing you cash in a pocket? $16,000 a month. That's on average. I think you guys are probably working with the top shops. And you know, the top shops, what they're looking at for productivity, you know, that's on an average of $145 an hour. Some of my clients are at $320. So your top European shop that it doesn't have a technician probably costing you $25,000 to $30,000 a month.
For the relocation package, it's more than just getting them there. I mean, there's a lot of other things like housing that comes into play. I mean, moving somebody from Kansas City to California, it's going to be a sticker shock trying to find a house.
Yeah.
And the way it is in other industries, and my firm is no different, like we have to, a lot of positions, we're kind of forced to use a recruiter at this point. Like you can't go out on your own anymore. And I think that this is coming to the automotive and people are surprised to see it. But right now, like any job that we go and get, you had to budget 20% because you're paying someone that. Are you guys seeing it get to that point in the automotive world? Or like, is there still enough people where out there that you can do this without a recruiter?
There's enough people out there that they can do it without a recruiter. They have to be on top of it.
I just don't see how, from some of what you guys have said and the amount of stuff and the communication, you're like, how could you, in a day of running your business, have time to dedicate that?
They can do it. And I always say that that's one of the flaws that we have, or, you know, challenges, is that, you know, I'm not going to do my own taxes. Yeah. I'm not going to do my own legal agreements, but I can do my own recruiting. And the reality is, something falls by the wayside if you do prioritize that. What usually happens is the urgent outweighs the priorities, and the shop owner, yeah, recruiting is a priority, but there's people calling them that need their cars, and the tech called out, and now they're having to go turn the wrenches themselves. And then recruiting does fall by the wayside. Speed is a real thing in this game.
A lot of this is, I think, a huge thing of pride. Like, think about the prototypical shop owner, right? A lot of them come from a technician side where they haven't found anything that they can't do, can't fix, right? So this is not that hard. I'm trying to find someone. There's no way that I need to call someone to say, I need help, I can't do this. But I just had one of my clients the other day. He's been looking for someone for like 4 to 6 months, and he finally reached out to you guys. And that's exactly what I said to him. I'm like, Alan, look, you're doing this, but you have 8,000 things that you're doing. Don't you think a professional looking this 24/7 is going to be able to find someone faster?
I think that's the piece right there, is this is all we're doing. So we're staying in front of the candidates, the ones that are coming inbound, the ones that we're reaching out to. We're in front of them consistently. Yes, you as a shop owner might be able to do it.
From 8:45 to 8:55 before everyone comes in, they're perusing resumes, shooting a couple text messages. Yeah.
They can do it, you know, for one day, or for, you know, a couple times a week, or a couple times a month, but it takes more than just that. You have to be consistent every day, every hour. You have to be on it.
Yeah. And you can't push the interviews to when's convenient for you. If somebody applies on a Sunday, they have the Sunday scaries, and we talk to them potentially on that Sunday, or AI recruiter definitely talks to them on Sundays. And then we get them on the phone on Monday and they can interview Tuesday. Then we're pushing to get that interview done on Tuesday. The longer you delay that, if it's a candidate on the market, they're already getting interviews at other places, because maybe they applied to us on Sunday, but applied to somebody else on Thursday. Yeah. We have to always operate in that, like, they have two interviews lined up. That's our mindset.
I have a rule, and for my clients, if you're interested in somebody, I want you to interview them within 3 days, max. If you go outside of that, it's not even worth it.
Well, because like you said, the average shop owner needed to hire this person 3 months ago, there is going to be someone more desperate than you are. Like, do they have a better shop? No. Do they have deeper pockets? No. Would they be willing to just throw a certain amount of money to get that person? Yeah.
Well, and the issue there, though, is they will throw whatever it is, but we still have to plug this hole. Then we go through a dry spell, because not everybody's always applying. It goes like this. And now it's, well, you haven't delivered anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, we had somebody, but it took you a week to get back to us.
I told Carm recently, I think at one of the SEMA podcasts, that, you know, we're all football fans. I'm like, we're at a first and goal from the 30 instead of a first and goal from the 5, right? Like, you know, it's a lot different when you know that you can, you know, your 4 plays to get a touchdown or at least 3 points. Like, the Super Bowl is full of field goals. But a lot different when you're at the 5-yard line than at 30. So, you know, especially with a running clock. So, but I think there's things that shops could do. I think signing bonuses. So we talk about comp,
strategic,
right? Like,
yeah, let's talk about that. Like, what is setting people apart? Because, like, you got 10 offers out there for all these shops. What are you seeing? And maybe it's different for a technician and advisor. Like, what's setting people apart?
So first off, I think the number one thing that gets in their way is that these guys are getting this paid this much.
Or girls.
Or girls, right? And I can't pay this person more.
Just what a mental of, like, I can only pay 36 for this position. They're seeing that the position's 42, and just instead of redoing.
My other guys and gals are making this, and I get it as a business owner.
Yeah, it's true.
I've been there too.
That's some market research as well.
There's ways to get around it, right? So you can pay that person less, but give them a signing bonus, or, hey, I'm going to give you an annual bonus or a stay bonus. Like, you can get around that without jeopardizing everybody else on your payroll. So I think a signing bonus would set them apart. And unfortunately, if they're using us, they already are like, well, I'm already paying promotive a fee. So we trip over dollars to pick up pennies here. It's like we have this candidate ready to go. They want to work for you.
The bill's out $268 an hour. Yeah,
I commonly have to tell people, I'm like, listen, if Promotive was not involved, would you have hired this person? Yeah. And 99.9% of the time is yes. Then stop getting in your own way.
Yeah, exactly. Like they don't want our fee to get in the way of it. But and at the end of the day, when you take $2 an hour that somebody wants more, that will make it a no-brainer for them. Like, do the math on that, right? It's $80 a week.
They can really look down and see where they can get creative when it comes to the vacation time and how they calculate that to ensure that they're being able to support that.
Not even just the vacation time, because like some people are like, well, I'll pay vacation, but it's $5 a day. But like how you're actually making it fair for these people.
And what expenses do they have that $2 or $5 makes a difference? So a tool allowance is something that they can come on top with. A daycare credit. I mean, I have some shops that do a daycare credit, which I believe I could be completely wrong, but I believe it's taxable in some aspects.
Or a lot of cases, not taxable. Yeah, it's a deduction for the business. It's a fringe benefit for people. Yeah, very similar to health insurance and stuff like that.
I mean, if I was a shop owner, I would look at all the things that are tax deductible and say, okay, what can I play with here that I know are my employees' responsibilities that they're going to have to go do? One of my clients, he pays a toll fee for his whatever, or a card thingamajigger for them to be able to commute in. So there's stuff that you can be creative and figure out to offer in addition to, and it calculates the same at the end of the year.
Yeah, gas allowance is something that I've come across with shops that are in very rural areas in particular, that they give a credit card for gas and they say you get, you know, $200 a week because a lot of these guys drive diesel trucks and everything.
What about a vehicle? I know it sounds really stupid, but what about a vehicle?
Yeah.
If they're commuting, I mean, I definitely, if I was, I haven't gone into an office since 2016, I think. So, but if I was commuting, somebody offered me a car, I'd be like, I might consider that.
For sure. Yeah. And the big thing that I have my clients do for the most part is reimbursement. So if you're reimbursing someone for something, it's never going to be taxable to them because you're assuming that they have some sort of cost. I had a client that just got his advisor a new truck. So went out, bought the new truck on it and said, you're allowed to drive a certain amount of miles a month. So he was only allowed to drive up to like 1400, but it works out to be like $860 a month. His truck payment's like 840. My client is able to reimburse for mileage, 100% legitimate. He gets a write-off on it. And now he gets to pay for his truck tax-free. I mean, super cool stuff. And this is what it is. I mean, like you guys are seeing it. I'm seeing it in the shops. This is where if you're not doing this as a shop owner, you're losing these people.
Oh, that, and it's, you can educate the candidate on how this is better for them. Let's just use round numbers and say, you know, 90,000 with a truck versus 100,000 with no truck.
Yeah.
What are their taxes that they pay on 100,000 versus what are their taxes on the 90?
Or just like, what a cool offer. Like, you don't need to be high pressure because at that point, you're not even worried about them going to like, go shop this offer. I feel pretty confident that no one else is going to probably buy you a GMC Sierra.
Yeah. And healthcare comes into it too, right? Healthcare is a big thing for this industry. We are a large industry that has been identified as being essential and needed, but yet we have to pay for healthcare off of the small little puzzle piece of the shops. Not saying they're small, but you know what I mean? It's off the numbers. Well, what are they doing? A lot of technicians now are asking for healthcare. Shops are not able to always provide it. So are they getting creative and giving a stipend to offset it? What are they doing that they can help while they're trying to find this out and figure it out?
Yeah. What someone said to me that made a really good point is like, again, just like when people get mad at their customers just asking for price shopping, you know, to put out there that you're willing to do health insurance, you're willing to do retirement. Because again, what people are looking for is money. If you don't offer health insurance, but you're going to add $1,400 a month to their pay so they can get their own health insurance, then you offer health insurance. There's an extra middleman in between. But yeah, that's what I hear a lot is like, get creative. Like it's creative for this industry. But like when my wife worked for a hospital system, they gave us stuff for daycare. They gave us HSA. Like they had creative stuff for like wellness programs. But like a lot of this doesn't cost a lot of money. And the big thing that I tell everyone, everyone listening to this, well, this is a bit tricky, right? I'll probably give them bad advice. But hey, everything is deductible until the IRS ever catches you, right? That's the first one. But for fringe benefits, guys, it really is a gray area. If you are going to offer the same benefit to all of your team, you can pretty much do whatever you want. If you want to have a gym membership deductible, you got to offer to the entire team. If you're doing a tools allowance, do I have to give my technician that makes 180 grand a year the same exact tool allowance as the general service kid? No. Do we have to offer it for everyone in some sort of normal way? Yeah. So absolutely. This is where we talk to our clients, usually trying to keep that guy or trying to give someone a bonus. But if you're trying to win this over, it seems silly, but $100 a week to the Snap-on guy is probably going to win that technician.
Yeah.
And I think another thing also is selling the processes of the shop. So a lot of times technicians get frustrated because of disconnect from the advisor. They have a brand new advisor that doesn't know how to do X, Y, or Z is a common thing I hear often. It's in a crucial piece. I mean, just the same way that our operation works, our recruiters and our account managers, they are equally supporting each other. And if one doesn't do what they need to do, everybody fails and vice versa. And when you have an advisor that is so crucial to the back end of the house and the technicians are so crucial to the front end of the house, you need to ensure to sell what that structure is and how it works and why it works so that the people coming in can support it, but also understand that not every shop is like that. And there is a value to having that.
Very cool. Yeah. So like sell yourself so that they know what they're comparing. Because if you don't sell yourself, they've only looked at whatever you've had on your social media or whatever you've said, you know, give them all the tools. But then the same flip side, you got to look introspectively and be like, do you have everything to showcase to these people that is going to win you over and have people pick you over the dealership or whatever?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, I talked about this on one of the podcasts recently. Like, I'm a big believer of putting your people on your website. You know, they're proud to be on a website.
And in this industry, people are now getting the opposite and they're hiding these guys like they're prize ponies.
Poached, right? Like, but the reality is, they do know each other. It's so small, especially within the community.
Yeah.
They know each other. So
I love that idea. That's a cool one. And we're recording this here in Vision in Kansas City. And I've heard this from shop owners that they say, I don't like to bring my people here because someone else is poaching them. It's a 100% true aspect, but the causation's really funny. They think the causation is from these other guys approaching them. And it's like, if your employee can be stolen, that's you. You weren't taking care of them. You weren't shown on the path to whatever they were trying to do. They didn't feel cared for. But no, it was just because that other shop owner bought him a beer. That's the reason that he left a 5-year position.
Yeah. We don't poach at Vision. We actually, it's the opposite. We always say that
if you're here,
you're with a shop that cares about you. And we have 7 of our candidates that we've placed that are here. And it's super exciting because I'm telling the 2 recruiters we brought who have never been to Vision before, that you literally have changed their lives.
Mm-hmm.
They're, I guarantee, you know, 6 of the 7.
6 of 7.
I didn't have to see her to know she was doing that.
6 of the 7 have never been to something like this.
Yeah.
And their shop is truly investing in them. And we talk about these types of events. And I think having, like, saying that you will reimburse for ASE certifications is different than that you'll reimburse for ASE certifications and we go to Vision or ASTA or STX World Pack training.
Well, I think it's more than the money too, because it's like, not only are they giving me money, but that's a lot different than just bonusing me for production. Like, they're invested in me. They're invested in like the product of that I'm trying to build here.
I hope the shops are paying these technicians for being here. I'm going to assume that most of them are. And I think that's a big deal too. And guess what? They get to travel. They get exposure. The fact that I have 2 recruiters here who have never been to Kansas City before, and we take them out to a great barbecue dinner. Like, that's culture.
And just also, what about the team? Like, how much, you know, and that's what most of my clients that come here, that's the big thing that they say is like, classes are great, right? Obviously, Sherry does an awesome time here. But realistically, the time that these guys are spending together is usually high stress. They got other stuff going on. But like, imagine just like the mesh and the communication when you can sit down and, you know, have a drink and really get to know people.
And if we can normalize shops getting out of their own way and saying, oh, I don't want to, you know, invest in them because somebody might poach them, whatever, and say, so what?
Yeah.
If they do, because more people are going to bring more people here, we're going to have more of an educated industry for these skills, and it's not going to worry about that anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. If you're the shop, you're the shop owner, and you have, I don't know, 3 daughters right now, right? And you told your kid that there's all this cool stuff out there. And the kid asks the shop owner, you know, the business they're working for, you know, can I go to this? And the shop is like, no, we don't send our people, but they go to this stuff themselves, right? Like, would you want your kid working?
Right,
would you want
That's
your
like
kid
saying
working?
You're going to Disneyland without your kid,
right? Like, the shops wouldn't want their own kids to not have these experiences, but we're doing it to other people's kids.
it's a short-term, long-term decision, right? Like, if you want to keep that person a short-term, do not put them in front of anyone. Yeah. Logical, they can't hire them if they don't see them. Yeah. In a long-term, like, there's a bigger issue here.
And for the record, I used to feel that way with the payments industry. I did not want to bring my people to the payments. I have changed dramatically over the years. I started 360 when I was 26, and you know, most of us aren't 26. We're mature enough to say we should be doing what's best for our people. Yeah. And we shouldn't be hindering their growth. And you know what? If somebody else poaches them and is willing to pay them, you know, $20 an hour more, good for them. Yeah. Like, we should be happy, because guess what? Now that person is going to stay in the industry for sure, probably longer than maybe they would have before. So, like, we should be genuinely happy for them.
I mean, it definitely is a confidence boost.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, Apple came after my employees. It was the best backhanded compliment I've ever had, right? And literally it was doubling salaries and giving health benefits that I couldn't even compete
with. And if you're the right boss, you don't go and say, no, you need to stay here. You say, you need to leave.
I cried when my girl, Victoria Fox, like, still in great touch with her. Like, I was devastated.
But don't you also say that you hired the right person? If this person can ultimately outgrow you, then it's like, I had that top talent. If you've never had someone get poached from you, like, everyone knows your technicians, but they now know them and they're like, nah, they're good over there.
Well, let's take a step back and realize majority of shop owners are technicians that wanted something more, that wanted to go build something.
You're mad at them for doing what you just did.
Hello.
Yeah.
It's like getting mad at our kids, right? Like, hey, you are a little miniature version of me with long hair, but you're not
how I
am. On the flip side, we have shops that will say, I don't want anybody that worked at this shop, they have bad habits and everything. Like, you know, so you want to make sure you're still that shop that, you know, people respect, because guess what? The techs are saying the same thing. Like, the techs that came to us from this shop,
Well, you guys probably have an awkward thing, because you're like, well, you don't want a tech from that shop. But when I talk to those techs, they don't want to work for you anyway. So
we have a lot of shops in this industry that now are looking at resumes, say, oh, we're too job hoppy. It is a 50-50. It is either 50% the technician or 50% the shop. It is not something that we can look at and just write somebody off because they had a short stint here and they moved on. There are so many different elements, especially if we look at the fact that shops for a long time now just put a warm body that can kick tires. And then they let them go because it got slow, or they found somebody else and they were able to level them up. We need to have conversations with these technicians, understand why they had short stints, and give them an opportunity to explain themselves. Because half of the time, it is the shop. It is not them. It's the shop overpromising and under-delivering. And it's the shop not providing the right work. You bring an A-tech in with DIAG skills and you're not giving them any of that work. Well, what are they going to do?
And again, like, if you're a shop owner, look in the mirror. Like, if you've been in business for 30 years, there was a time that if you would have brought a guy in, you were just slow for 3 months. It doesn't mean you have a bad shop, but put yourself in their shoes. Like, you're taking money off of my table until it's in 26 when it's really expensive. So shop owners like the one-way loyalty, right? They're like, hey, you need to work with me forever. By the way, I just sold yesterday to private equity. Bye, guys. See you, right? You know, I just want to say thank you guys for coming on. Great talking to you guys. Thank you for being such supporters of us.
We love you guys.
Yeah. Clients love you. The feedback is awesome. If you guys need to recruit top talent for your top team, I always say it. Yeah, call you guys. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
So as always, love talking to Sam and Lisa. Learned a ton on it. So cannot say thank you to them enough for not only coming on to the show, but being such loyal supporters of the show and the aftermarket in general. If you need to hire top talent for your team, I cannot stress this enough. Give them a call and let them help you out, just like they have hundreds of other shops. As always, please share if you have any questions, comments, ideas for future episodes. Shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. And don't forget, you can find the rest of the shows on the new Automotive Repair Podcast Network app on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com, because the best conversations in the industry start here. Have a question for Hunt? Check the show notes for Hunt's email or text Parmelis at 301-307-5413.